Hello, everyone in Construction Land. Welcome again to another episode of Constructive Conversations, your source for anything and everything construction related and hopefully a little bit more. So I'm your host, Eddie Thompson, CPA, CCIFP. And this is this podcast is brought to you by my employer, the fine folks of Brown Edwards & Company. Today, we have a repeat guest on the show, the Chief Executive Officer of the Contractors Association of West Virginia, Jason Pizzatella. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing well, Eddie. Thanks for having me back for a second round.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. It was just about 1 year ago that we recorded the very first inaugural episode, and you were the very first guest. So I wanted to make sure that as we entered the second year of this podcast, that I had you as the first guest of that season. So it's great to have you. I'm sure there's a lot that we'll catch up on. I noticed you have the Flying WV on your shirt today, so we're going to cue Country Roads. Do you happen to be going up to the game tomorrow?
Yes, and I hope that the Mountaineers will be able to play that song after the game, which obviously signifies a win, and they were able to do against Pitt. Not as successful last week against Kansas, but we'll keep our fingers crossed for a better performance against Utah.
Right. Well, I think it was in our podcast last year that you had a Nostradamus moment and kind of predicted, or at least hoped, that maybe Rich Rod would be back on the sidelines. It didn't start off too well, maybe a little shaky, but anytime you beat Pitt, that's kind of a successful start to your comeback here. So you're gonna hang your hats on that one. And I think it was, I would hate to rub it in if there's anyone from Pittsburgh that's listening to the podcast or any Pitt fans, but I think I even saw a video where Pitt's band was singing along with Sweet Caroline, and the improv words that go along with, a Mountaineer fan singing that.
Yeah, it was quite a ending to the game. And as you said, anytime you can beat Pittsburgh, it's good for the Mountaineers. And to do it in overtime and to come back with 21 unanswered points obviously was a good outcome for the Mountaineers.
Yeah. So we'll hope for better outcomes than last week in the future. And if you see my son there, please try to make sure he's behaving as a 23-year-old. It's hard to parent, but I got spies everywhere still, just like my mom does for me.
Right.
So we'll just jump in with some questions. We talked about a lot last year, and the construction landscape, I wouldn't say has changed a lot, at least as far as what I'm seeing. Everybody's still getting a lot of work. There's still a lot to go around. Backlogs are big. But you are right on the heartbeat of what's going on in the construction industry in West Virginia. So I want to get your thoughts on several things. So what have you seen, or exactly what has the CAWV been up to in the last 12 months?
It's been a busy 12 months for the association and for our members. People are still busy. They're still hard at work. That's our slogan. That's our logo. And we preach it every day. Some of the same themes that we talked about a year ago are still as relevant today as they were then. And obviously that's work zone safety. There was a fatality that affected the industry. One of our largest members about 2 weeks ago on Interstate 64. I always hate to start with a special podcast or special show like this with some negative news, but it reminds us how important work zone safety is to the industry. Losing one person is one person too many. And so work zone safety is something that we've been preaching every single day, every day. The one thing that's keeping our members, I don't want to say keeping them up at night, but it's keeping them with their eye on the political landscape in not just in Washington, but also in Charleston. And that is the issue with tariffs. The cost of commodities, how they're fluctuating based on some of our country's foreign policy and tariff changes over the last 9 months with the new administration. You know, Eddie, just like if you're trying to build an addition onto your house, or our listeners trying to build something, they want to know what it's going to cost. And it's up to contractors to give them that as best estimate that as they possibly can. And sometimes when commodity prices change, it makes it harder to plan. You know, we as an industry, we love predictability, whether it's on cost, whether it's on workforce, on taxes. We like predictability because then it translates, it gives our customers predictability. And so while we always pay attention to the political system, regardless of where it is or what time of year it is, the tariffs is something that is keeping our members occupied, as well as trying to unpack some of the changes from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act enacted by law into enacted into law by Congress a few months ago. Is something that's keeping us busy, and us as an association, we try to keep our members up to date with some of the best news just as often as we possibly can, and the most up-to-date news so that they can operate their businesses effectively.
Exactly. So speaking of tariffs, have you seen or I won't say provided any language, because even though I know that you're an attorney by nature, you're probably not giving out much legal advice, but have you seen much any language as far as clauses in contracts for tariffs, tariff price adjustments, or it's sort of like what we did with price escalations in the past few years?
Yeah, it's something that we are studying at the moment as possible changes to some of the standard form agreements. You know, we rely on our professional members like Brown Edwards and others that you know, advise us and advise our members on tax policy, which is important. Price escalation is something that, at least since the worldwide pandemic in 2020, is something that has been in these standard agreements. They weren't specific to tariffs, but it is something that we are examining with our state and federal agency partners as prices change, especially when there's steel involved or anything coming from China. You know, there was an incident a few weeks ago or an example a few weeks ago of a steel product that was in Canada, that was manufactured in Canada, but it was done so by a company that is headquartered in China. And so one of the things that I get calls about all the time, and I don't give legal advice on, but it is how do the changes in the tariff policy affect things like steel, something that our members buy almost every single day. And so it's something that we rely on our professional advisors, you know, to tell us, but we don't have a crystal ball. And so things change, and we just try to give our members the best advice we possibly can while we can. And so that's something that is obviously keeping us very, very busy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was definitely a lot of items that came out of the One Big Beautiful Bill, still trying to peel back every layer of that onion to see how it affects all of our clients and throughout the state. So you do a really good job of keeping everyone updated throughout the legislative session. Can you give us some highlights from the past legislative session?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, those kind words. I try to, you know, boil it down as simply as I possibly can for our members on a weekly basis when the legislature's in session. We had a new administration in the governor's office. We had a new Senate president and a new leadership team in the Senate. The leaders in the House stayed pretty steady after last year's election. The legislature, every year they have to appropriate funds to the road fund so that our Division of Highways can operate. The legislature appropriated an extra $100 million to the road fund from the general fund this year that our members have stayed very busy on, as well as they've continued to invest in water, wastewater, stormwater, broadband, and school and airport construction was a big emphasis item for the legislature earlier this year. You can't go anywhere in our state right now without seeing a bridge under construction, without seeing an airport terminal renovated, without seeing schools being renovated. And there was a new delivery method that the legislature authorized this year in West Virginia for the first time through Senate Bill 587. And that was the what we call CMAR for short, Construction Management at Risk. It's a method that's been used in Ohio and in Kentucky with some success the last few years. but wasn't authorized in West Virginia until the legislature authorized it earlier this year, and it went into effect July 1st. And we're seeing a few state agency owners already try to explore using that delivery method. And so that was what, the biggest things that came from the state legislature earlier this year. And as you mentioned, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, having that certainty on tax policy and the tax rates that were set by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, seeing those made permanent was something that was very important to contractors, as well as extending the depreciation provisions and the provisions on research and development. Because again, just having that predictability for contractors is something that makes our job easier so that we can focus on what's important to our customers, and that is building projects and delivering projects on a timely basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So last year we were coming into an election year with a lot of uncertainties. I believe when we recorded this back in last September, we were coming upon the presidential election, and just everything up in the air at that point as far as where taxes were going to go, where some of the spending was going to go. And it's nice to at least have nothing certain, but at least have a little bit of certainty, like you said, coming up the next few years and see where things go in the future from political landscape. Just the past couple of days, we spent time out at the CFMA Buckeye Conference in right across the river from Cincinnati in Covington, Kentucky. And they gave an economic update there, talked about a lot of spending in a lot of areas where construction was going on. Even talked about conversations they had with Ken Simonson, who I know is a friend of yours and a friend of the our firm and CAWV. Can you talk about the construction industry economics right now in West Virginia a little bit?
Yeah, I mean it's one of the largest economic impacts for our state is the construction industry. And one of the things that I've heard Ken Simonson say a lot about the last couple of years, and he's been more specific about it in the last year or so, is the workforce participation and West Virginia's workforce participation rate, which unfortunately has been 49th or 50th for over 3 decades. You know, just like I say all the time, we don't have an association without our members. We don't have an industry without the workers that are out there doing the work every single day on behalf of our member companies. And in our state population has been right around 1.7, 1.8 million in the last few decades, and it doesn't look like it's going to increase. And so we are trying to do the best we can with what we have. From an association perspective, we are made a great emphasis, just like you and I talked about a year ago, Eddie, on workforce development within our own association. Because if we don't get students in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, which is where we're starting now, we even started in 4th grade in a classroom in Putnam County Schools earlier this year. If we're not starting that early, sometimes we miss our window to recruit the next best and the next crop of leaders in our industry, because we don't have that economic impact without the companies that do that work. And we have to rely on our state and federal public agency owners to give us a forecast on what they plan to do over the next year or two, and they've done that. But it's the most pessimistic I've heard Ken Simonson, at least in my couple of years working for the association, with one caveat, and that is he was optimistic that while Congress is fighting over what to do with appropriations and spending right now, as you and I sit here recording this, they're already starting to look at the future of the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, which expires in the fall of 2026. And so the fact that Congress is already paying attention to that, and that West Virginia is very well situated with Senator Shelley Moore Capito as the chair of the committee that's writing that next bill, that's the one piece of optimism we have, is because what we do, Eddie, and what your clients do is very politically popular at a time when there's all kinds of other things to argue about politically in this country, and in this state. One thing people can agree on is they like to have good infrastructure, whether it's a smooth road, a smooth bridge, a school, a water system, an airport, or a piece of broadband in an area of West Virginia that's never been serviced before. That kind of stuff is important to people. And it's a lot of times very bipartisan or very nonpartisan, if you want to go a step further. And so that's what keeps us motivated on the political side of things, because of how important it is to the future of our industry, the laws that our partners in Washington and Charleston make every day.
Yeah, I believe even going on your all's website, the CAWV.org website, you even have a drop-down menu that narrows down to workforce. That, you know, shows what all you're heavily involved with the workforce programs. And it lists a few of them. Are there any of them that you want to talk about?
Well, there's three main programs that we're working on right now and have been for the last couple of years. One is our what we call CLP for short, Construction Leadership Program, which is developing the leadership potential of our workers and our member companies that already have workers in the industry. We have Build West Virginia, which is at buildwv.com, a program that CAWV started back in 2021, but that was right in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. And so now that we're 4 years removed from that, we're trying to renew emphasis on recruiting in elementary schools and middle schools. And we started Build It Up West Virginia in 2024, which is the third program that I'm very proud of, and I know our board of directors is very proud of. We just completed a cohort with elementary school students in Putnam County earlier this year. We're going to expand that to Raleigh County and Berkeley County over the next year in select schools, because it allows students a hands-on perspective at what the industry offers. And at a time when our industry can offer new graduates, whether it's high school graduates, community technical college graduates, or even college graduates, a position, well-paying position, without any student loan debt, that's something that is attractive to parents and guidance counselors and teachers and students that may not have contemplated a career in construction before. So if we can do that and we can get students in at a young age, we're having some success, because the data shows it, and I'm very proud of it. And we're going to continue to expand those programs with the support of our members.
Yes. So not just the school systems, because like I've mentioned to you before, I had a nephew go through the technical school there in Putnam County and is doing very well for himself in the electrical field as an electrician. But also we have non-traditional students, such as you know, someone that's been out of school for a while, or adults that are getting back into the workforce or finding a new career in the workforce. Are there programs for them out there? Like I know that you all also are involved with Jobs and Hope.
Yeah, Jobs and Hope West Virginia, great point. I'm glad you mentioned it, Eddie, because it's a, you know, at a time when Jobs and Hope now is coming up on its 3-year anniversary of being a permanent program. You know, we're all about giving people a chance to, you know, make their lives better, especially those that may need a second chance. You know, Jobs and Hope West Virginia, the Mountaineer Challenge Academy, programs that we couldn't participate in if it weren't for the support of the state of West Virginia and state government. We have members all the time. Whenever there's a graduation from one of those programs, they go to those graduations so they can interview those candidates right there. And a lot of them leave with a job offer right on the spot. And that's important because, you know, those families that have invested in those particular, you know, men and women that want to better their lives, if they can leave with a job offer on that day, it just makes the fact that they went through that program and completed it that much more worthwhile. And the last program that I'll mention that is not a CAWV program, but it's one that our members are using a lot of these days. It's called West Virginia Ready. It's a program that the community technical college systems have started under one roof, because the state is now paying last dollar tuition for people that want to go and get a credential or get a license in the construction field. Our members will hire them. And we're seeing that having a very positive impact right now in West Virginia, and we're just going to keep supporting it as long as our state government partners support it.
Very good. So when we talked last time, you had your big three, and I know that there are a lot of projects going on in the state, a lot of talk of data centers, not just in West Virginia, but all over the country. And I know that's become a big thing, the data centers, the powering stations that will actually power those because they require a lot of electricity, a lot of power. Have you replaced what was in your head as the big three in West Virginia with any new projects, or do you see what's out there on the horizon as far as large projects and the future of construction in West Virginia?
Yeah, data centers is obviously something that our legislature has emphasized, as well as Governor, you know, Morrissey's office. There are several permit applications that are pending. There are a few in Mingo County. There's a few in Tucker County that's pending between Thomas and Davis at the moment. I suspect within the next year, maybe the first or second quarters of 2026, you're going to see some announcements about some data centers in West Virginia. You know, there's two big threes, right? One is the, you know, Quarter H, Coalfields Expressway, King Coal Highway. Those are the three big projects that are three big major highway projects that are out there right now. The Morrissey administration has shifted some of those funds with an emphasis on Quarter H. I've heard Governor Morrissey and Secretary Todd Rumbaugh of DOT say that it's the goal of the Morrissey administration before he leaves office to get Quarter H, the final segments of Quarter H, under construction before he leaves office. I've seen estimates of 2030. I've seen estimates of 2035 of being able to get that road complete all the way from Weston to off of I-79 all the way over to the Virginia state line through Wardensville in Hardy County. There are some other projects here in the Kanawha Valley that have just been finished that people are talking about. You know, Jefferson Roads being completed, four lanes, all the way from Corkle Avenue to US 119 Quarter G. If you're driving on I-64, you're seeing a new interchange built at Culloden. You're seeing the Nitro St. Albans Bridge now been open for a year. And you're seeing the widening of the interstates all the way from Merritts Creek to Barbersville. Interstate 77, they're doing a full depth replacement of the interstate in Jackson County and the Kanawha County state line. And of course, I-79 just saw a big widening project finished. The Wheeling Streetscape is wrapping up in Wheeling. And I-81 is being widened in Martinsburg. So you take all of those different projects and you combine those with the big three, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. And that's why the future of the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, whatever happens in the fall of 2026, is so important to West Virginia, because those projects can't happen without the funding from our federal agency partners. And so that's kind of what's going on. Still a lot of schools under construction and being renovated, not just in the Kanawha Valley, but statewide. And so that's going to keep our members busy for a long time to come, especially with some of the transmission projects that are currently under application right now with the Public Service Commission, whether it be a natural gas pipeline, whether it be continued use of the coal industry and coal-fired power plants, but also transmission of that electricity within the PJM network, which West Virginia is a part. So all very important, and it's stuff that's keeping our members across all segments of the industry very, very busy.
Yes, definitely. And this, I would have to think that this investment in infrastructure just spurs economic development in other areas, bringing in more businesses to the state because our roads are better, their access to areas of our state are better. So I appreciate the investment as far as it cutting down my commute from Eleanor to Charleston to under half an hour. So that's been great for me. What would you consider, this is a two-part question, the biggest advantages and the biggest threats to contractors right now?
Well, let's start with the biggest threat first, and that is the ability to recruit the next generation of the contracting industry. You know, we in West Virginia are blessed with a number of member companies that are second, third generation owned. We have they're headquartered right here in West Virginia. You know, a company like Orders Construction, you know, comes to mind as one that's been around for several generations, and we hope is around for several generations more. Neighborball Construction is another one that comes to mind. But those owners are looking at who the next generation is, not as far as ownership goes, but as far as who is going to work in the industry. And that's the biggest threat is if we don't have the workers necessary to deliver the projects that our state and federal agency partners ask us to deliver. So it's a big challenge, and it's why we as an association have put such an emphasis on workforce, not just workforce development, workforce training, but workforce participation. People that may have left the workforce for a number of reasons, but maybe go through Jobs and Hope West Virginia, or maybe decide to go and get a two-year community technical college degree. We want them to consider construction. And if we're not successful, that could be a big threat in the future. One of the advantages is we have a small state, and we have the industry has access to the decision makers that affect the future of the industry in ways that some of our large state neighbors cannot. You know, I have members all the time that will call me and they'll say, hey, they want to talk to the Commissioner of Highways, or they want to talk to the Governor's Chief of Staff, or they want to talk to someone in state government who has a decision pending that's going to impact their business. If you're in a big state like North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and others, sometimes you don't get that personal treatment. West Virginia, you can. You know, you can get the governor on the phone, you know, pretty quickly if there's a particular project that's of importance to him. And then finally, I think an advantage for West Virginia contractors is the stability with which our legislature and our state government are supporting construction projects. You know, if you're changing policy, which sometimes happens at the federal level every 4 years, every 8 years, you know, that predictability sometimes goes by the wayside. In West Virginia, we have the stability of having a stable tax system and a business-friendly climate. So that's one of the biggest advantages that I tell people when they contemplate investing in West Virginia.
So there's a lot of great strengths and advantages. To your point about future leadership, and I think that's great why you all have the Construction Leadership Program in place. At the conference we just attended, they had a diagram set up. It was a pie chart of the demographics, age group demographics of the construction industry, at least in Ohio where we were. And over 52% of that workforce was over the age of, I believe, 44, which, you know, in a couple, 15, 20 years, they're cycling out. The worry is that there won't be the next generation to take over. But one thing they did mention is that a lot of people, and I think you even mentioned it too, is a lot of people are entering that industry and that workforce later in life. So that demographic pie chart is kind of misleading in that you're not necessarily waiting for those 18 to 30 year olds to take over in 20 years, because you're going to have people coming in later in life with varying backgrounds. And but we do see, and that is a concern when we think about succession, leadership changes. You know, there are a lot of options, you know, as far as passing on to family members or key employees, or ESOPs have become popular. Mm-hmm. And even private equity, you know, tries to come into everything where they, you know, they can make a return on their investment. So finding the right fit, what fits for your company, hopefully everyone is doing their part to identify, you know, down the road where the next group of leaders for the company is going to come from.
Yeah, I hope so. And succession planning is something that's very important. And if you're not doing it, you know, what's the old saying goes, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. Or if you're not moving forward, you're losing ground. You know, when it comes to succession planning, that's important. And I know it's something that is on the minds of our members. And that's why they rely on tax professionals and accounting professionals like our friends at Brown Edwards you know, to help advise them on things like that. Because it's important to have a professional or a group of professionals on your side so that you don't have to do it by yourself, do it alone.
So biggest threats to contractors right now?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it's you know, not having that workforce in place to be able to deliver the projects that are that we're asked to deliver. And another threat that I think probably goes without saying, but I'm gonna say it anyway, and that is the instability. You know, a lot of people in the construction industry, at least in West Virginia, they don't often pay attention to foreign policy, right, for our country, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Israel, whether it's Russia, you know, whatever the case may be. Our foreign policy in this country, tariffs aside, is causing some instability in prices. Supply chain's not much of an issue anymore, like it was in the pandemic. Getting access to material is the cost of material and the way it's increasing, you know, going to price out some agency owners from being able to do projects. That's something that, you know, worries us a little bit. Is because we got to keep our members at work, hard at work, no pun intended, and to not have the work out there, you know, is obviously a threat. So, you know, that having that workforce component, but also having the ability to rely on our government partners to have as much stable policy as they possibly can, so that we can do our jobs and do what we do well, and that is build business.
I'm going to ask you a question that I know it's outside of my wheelhouse, but it's the question is going to be, is this an advantage or a threat? And it's going to be a future topic of, has already been, but it's going to be another future topic of the podcast and even one of our construction webinars that we put on here, Brown Edwards. Would you consider technology and more specifically AI in construction an advantage or a threat?
I don't think we have a choice, Eddie, but to make AI and make the use of AI an advantage. Because it's here. It's here. We have members that are using it on a daily basis. And even our consultants and friends in the engineering and architectural firms are studying ways to use AI to make them more effective in their jobs. We have no choice but to use it. And mm-hmm. I just came back from D.C. For a fall meeting of the Associated General Contractors of America last week, where they spent 2 weeks two hours talking about just the use of AI in the construction industry. And I've always been a little bit hesitant. You know, again, I'm a lawyer by training, and so I was taught that you had to write like a lawyer. I've even seen ChatGPT and the ability to use some of those open AI apps and subscription services. The writing has gotten, I mean, obviously you can't write legal briefs and you can't write personal letters, but it's really gotten effective. And of course you have to read, you know, this podcast we're doing right now probably has a way to summarize what you and mm-hmm. I talk about. Anybody who uses Zoom or Teams has access to that AI summary. So if we're not using it to our advantage, we're falling behind. Now, is an AI and a computer ever going to be able to build a school? No. But the ability to prepare and the ability to develop, you know, a set of plans that are easy to understand so that our estimators can price them out, the use of AI is here, and we have no choice but to make it our advantage.
Yeah, I agree. It's not going to go anywhere except for forward. And it's an advantage for those that are going to utilize it, and it's a threat to those that are just adverse to the idea of using it, because they'll end up getting left behind. And really, yeah. AI is just, it's going to be a tool that will hopefully make you not replace people, but make people more efficient, more accurate, because there is still that trust and verify portion to anything you do with AI.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just an area that really interests me, and every conference that we go to, we see more and more software companies out there that are offering a program that is supposed to make your entering your accounts payable easier, running your payroll easier, your credit card expenses easier. So, and I haven't even gotten into the side of the bidding and estimating or project management and scheduling. material sourcing. I mean, in fact, I could be AI right now and just told ChatGPT to create me to do this interview, and I'm not real. But that's just how advanced that these things get.
Yeah, we have to stay on top of it as an industry, because if we're not, we're falling behind.
Yeah. So speaking of more science fiction stuff, I know that from talking to you the last time, you're a big Back to the Future fan. So hop in your DeLorean, fire up the flux capacitor, and tell me where you see the construction industry in West Virginia in the next 10 to 15 years.
I mean, I think the use of AI and technology is going to revolutionize the industry, just like it already has other industries. Our ability to be innovative and our ability to deliver projects on time, efficiently, under budget is important, because if we don't do it, member or owners will find a way to do it themselves or hire someone else to do it. So we have to maintain the ability to train, the ability to recruit workers, the ability to lobby and advocate for our industry's behalf in Washington and in Charleston. If we don't do all three of those things, then it's going to be trouble. But as far as the crystal ball is concerned, our association has 503 members. About 210 of those are contractors, and the remainder are those businesses like Brown Edwards that support the construction industry. And so we have the ability, I think, to really grow our association and grow our membership over the next 5 to 10 years, because we don't have an association without our members. And I think West Virginia's best days are ahead of it. And so the fact that we can go out and build things that need to be built in West Virginia is very important to our state's future, our state's economic development, ability to move forward as a state, so that we're not falling further behind. Is kind of where I see us going. Our members represent about 22,000 employees across the state. I could see that being 30,000 by 2030. Our border counties allow people to work every day in West Virginia, but live in Winchester, Virginia, or live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, whatever the case may be. Our goal as an association is to keep growing along with the industry. And so that's kind of where I see the next 5 to 10 years going. Because if we're not, then obviously we're falling further behind.
We're about to wrap up this episode, but are there any parting thoughts that you want to share with the audience?
No, I mean, we cover a lot of ground in this. I the fact that you guys had me here, or you had me here, Eddie, for a second year or a second bite, is very special to me. Podcasts like these are very important, because I try to find a new podcast or a new niche. If it's not true crime, it's something like what I'm doing at work while I'm driving up the interstate. And so I hope that it's been insightful for some of your listeners about the industry. And for those that aren't in the industry now that may come across this and think, hey, I've got a son or a daughter or a niece or a nephew that is looking for what their career path could be, maybe they'll consider construction. If they do, I hope they go to CAWV.org or buildwestvirginia.com and give us a call, because we're here to help.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how much we appreciate the relationship we have with you and the Contractors Association of West Virginia, the partnerships that we have. It's always great to talk to you, and I know that I can count on a lot of great information for you to deliver to the audience and to all the members of the CAWV and so on and so forth. But Jason, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy, but to spend an hour here with me and put out more content, great information, I really appreciate that. And we'll do this podcast again in another year, but we'll talk a lot in between that year.
I hope so. Thanks for all you guys do to support our industry, and for having me on the podcast again. I really enjoyed it.
You're very welcome. So this wraps up another edition of Constructive Conversations. Again, we want to thank our guest, Jason Pizzatella, for being with us today. make sure to subscribe to the Brown Edwards podcast on the YouTube channel or wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. This has been your host, Eddie Thompson. So long until next time.